This show is sponsored by Midi Health. There are great things that come with age: wisdom, experience, and knowledge, just to name a few. But if you're a woman over 40, it can also bring some less desirable things like hot flashes, insomnia, brain fog, moodiness, and weight gain, all symptoms of menopause and perimenopause. Yes, hormonal transition is a fact of life, but that doesn't mean you have to accept its symptoms as just another part of aging. Midi clinicians are menopause experts, equipped to support you with safe, effective, FDA-approved medications, as well as supplements, lifestyle coaching, and preventative health guidance. You'll come out of the experience feeling heard and with a plan to start feeling better. Midi offers accessible care. All their services are covered by insurance, and they're conveniently accessible through telehealth visits and 24/7 messaging. You deserve to feel great. Book your virtual visit today at joinmidi.com. That's joinmidi.com.
Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast.
All right, Payne and Pendergast with you. They nibble on the rat poison a little bit. D'Amico Ryans was asked about that yesterday. The rat poison, of course, being hearing and seeing some of your own press clippings. You're 2-0, and everybody's telling you how great you are. You're third or fourth in all the major power rankings. And guys see that. And do they buy into it, or do they ignore it and focus on the Minnesota Vikings? Well, evidence on the field would indicate, if I had to pick one or the other, that maybe they nibbled on the rat poison a little bit. D'Amico was asked about that yesterday.
Last week, we didn't play well. At the end of the day, that's all it came down to. We didn't play well. We had some good moments where we executed, made some nice plays, but they were negated by us. So it's very hard to win, again, when you got the Texans and the Vikings playing against the Texans. That's pretty hard to win that game. So once we get the Texans out of the way and we just go focus on our opponent and we handle us well, then we'll be just fine.
Yeah. I agree with what he's saying there. I do think it's possible CJ himself said, I think he used the exact words were something about we didn't play hard enough, or at times we didn't play hard. Like that,
yeah.
He used the word hard.
Yeah.
So there's that. We had Cam Akers on the post-game show. Cam Akers said this after the game.
Very aware of it as a team, you know what I mean? I don't think it's a problem. I just think we're too comfortable as a team sometimes, and knowing how good we are, knowing how much talent we have, knowing how the coaches, how they dial things up, I think we get too comfortable sometimes. And I don't think we're the team that people want to beat, you know, so being comfortable, that's not acceptable. You know what I mean? We have to come out every week, every game, and with the same mindset and same attitude, regardless of who we're playing, regardless of, you know, what the situation is. Being comfortable, that's not acceptable.
Yeah, and I think especially when you look at the penalties in the last 2 weeks, especially where the Texans had 12 penalties and they had 11 penalties, these were not aggressive penalties. These were boneheaded, stupid penalties. More so this past week than the previous week, at least. Some of them were, like Kalen Bullock's pass interference. That was an aggressive penalty made by a rookie, but it was aggressive, at least. The offensive line penalties, I mean, the noise is an explanation, not an excuse. That's the biggest and most frustrating thing about all of that. There will be other teams that go in and play in Minnesota this year that don't have as many pre-snap penalties as the Texans.
I would say I'd be shocked if anybody had more.
Right. So, and certainly not by one specific person.
Thank you.
And they were drive-killing penalties.
Yes, they were.
Three of the first six offensive series in that game were done in by offensive penalties, yep. Boneheaded penalties.
Yes.
So that's the frustrating thing about it. And hopefully that was the dose of reality for those guys as a unit, that, man, we got to clean a lot of stuff up. They were playing with a loud, you know, they're playing at home this week, but they were playing with the loudspeakers yesterday, I think, because they want to be sure they get all this pre-snap stuff as dialed in as possible. Make it as hard as possible during the week so that when you go out there on Sunday, it feels easy and that you're doing all the right things in the right order pre-snap so that you don't end up with these boneheaded penalties. They just simply, you can't operate that versus good teams or bad teams, but especially on the road versus a really good defense, it all came back to roost last week.
I think it can be both. I think D'Amico's answer is a perfectly acceptable answer. And I think at the same time, you can say that the team probably came in a little overconfident against Minnesota and Sam Darnold.
And some of it, too, I think, I have a hard time thinking that Caserio and D'Amico were totally comfortable with all of the off-season adulation and praise and everything. But I think there's a part of them that understands, like, look, some things guys have to learn for themselves. And you can, it's just like raising children. You can try to drill it into their head as much as you want, but they got to go out and make some mistakes on their own at times. Hopefully you scare them enough that they don't make the really big mistakes, but and hopefully drill enough values into them that they don't make the really, really big mistakes. But some things they just have to learn on their own. And hopefully last week was something that if you got the right kinds of guys, they learned a lesson. Because it was it's embarrassing to lose like that. It's really embarrassing.
So the next logical thing to do after they get destroyed like they did against Minnesota would be, okay, well, when's the next potential learning moment that's similar to that? It's this weekend. It's against Jacksonville. They're a 7-point favorite against a team that just got blown out by 37 on Monday Night Football. In the most embarrassing, I mean, getting blown out by 37 is embarrassing regardless of how it happens. They got blown out in the most embarrassing way, which is they couldn't stop giving up touchdowns. They gave up touchdowns on every drive in the first half. And the only reason it was 47-10 is because Buffalo decided it wouldn't be 67-10. You know, they just took the foot off the gas pedal in the second half of that game. So the next test of whether or not these guys are still feeling themselves or thinking that they're something that maybe they're not yet is Sunday against Jacksonville.
The really interesting thing is when you just talk about playing versus man versus playing versus zone.
Yeah.
I'm looking at right now amongst starting cornerbacks and or nickelbacks in the league. And of the top 21 of the guys that have played the fewest snaps of man coverage, percentage-wise, six of these cornerbacks are on the three teams that the Texans have already played. So they've played against defenses that play very little man coverage. Like the Vikings blitz a lot, but they do it very creatively and they play zone behind it and they do it. It's the new version of the zone blitz where back in the day the zone blitz was the big thing and then it kind of fell out of favor, but the Vikings have gotten really good at doing it. But between the Bears, the Colts, and the Vikings, those cornerbacks played very little man, pure man defense. Whereas the Jaguars, they play a boatload of man. So the opportunities for big plays, theoretically, should be there this week if the Texans take care of their business.
Would that be nice?
All those opportunities when teams are playing riskier defenses, theoretically, they should be there against the Jaguars. Now, I don't know if the Jaguars, because one of the starting cornerbacks is injured, are going to change up a little bit or not. But theoretically, there should be opportunities for an explosion. And if you take care of business and you don't kill yourself before you have the opportunity for those big plays, they should be there this week.
CJ Stroud talked about that yesterday. Confidence level, knowing that he's on a team that's very good against man coverage.
We're confident in everything, you know, like in zone and man and fire zone. And, you know, we've kind of seen it all this year, especially playing against a team that's kind of does what they like, what they're going to do week one, week two with Gus and the Colts, and then week two, and then week three against Minnesota, they kind of do everything. So then we've got a good rapport of just like defenses playing is different, but you know we've more so got zone, so you know we're willing to play anything. We whatever it is, we got to just find a way to win.
Yeah, CJ likes these challenges, man.
The thing about Minnesota last week was, man, and just in kind of my admiration for Brian Flores' defense, is that even when they were making good plays, you saw how hard it was. Like, CJ had to make some really nice throws to Nico Collins. That it had to be a perfect throw where he dropped it in that honey hole there between the safety and the cornerback.
Yep.
Some of the stuff over the middle, almost every reception to Stephon Diggs, it was as CJ was getting pressure in his lap and he had to really thread the needle. It should be, if the Texans' offense functions like a competent offense this week, it should look a little easier at least. There should be some man-on-man matchups where, all right, well, Nico's just beat his guy. Stephon Diggs has just beat his guy.
Yeah, that'd be good.
It, as long as the protection holds up.
Probably get our first look at John Metchie this weekend, I would imagine, if there's no Tank Dell. Maybe he gets on the field. We'll see.
Oh, yeah, that's true. Yeah, he hasn't been active for – he was inactive for all three games.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah, he has not suited up yet this year, so maybe – Maybe a look at John Metchie at some point here. We'll see. Bobby Slowick. C.J. Stroud was asked about that. C.J. Stroud and Bobby Slowick have formed a nice relationship here since C.J. got to the NFL and Bobby got here as the O.C. with DeMeco back in 2023. This has probably been, I would say, one of the rougher weeks in terms of public perception for Bobby Slowick. You know, a lot of frustration over their inability, continued inability to run the football at a high level. CJ getting hit now more frequently than we expected him to coming into the season through three games. And I think there's been some criticism over the actual play calling as well, the selection of plays. Here's CJ Stroud on the criticism of Bobby Slowick.
That's the job we signed up for, and, you know, Slow has done a good job of just keeping the head down, working. But, you know, we all have faith in him, and we know that he's trying to put us in the best positions, and we got to buy into the system just as much as he has to call good plays. And, you know, we're it's not a finished product because you add good players on the team, you know. It's a work in progress, and, you know, you don't really get your set, like, football team, I feel, until, like, week five, week six. But, you know, the time is of essence, and, you know, we got to get rolling. But, you know, I have the utmost faith in and Slow, and I know that, you know, he's been great, but we got to buy into the system just as much as he got to call great plays. And we know we all grown men, we got to do our jobs. So, you know, we all talk about we got each other's back, and we're gonna keep hold each other accountable and have each other back.
Yeah, look, and when it comes to the play calling, the play calling is fine, it's the execution, and that comes back on Bobby Slowick. But I'll use Laremy Tunsil as an example. And this is my frustration with Laremy Tunsil. It's that as we talked about yesterday, I think Laremy Tunsil could be a Hall of Fame caliber offensive tackle.
He has the physical ability to do that.
Yes.
Yes.
If he did a couple of things. One is, honestly, clean up the pre-snap stuff. And I'll use DJ Bienemé, who I think, for one, asked some really good questions in the press conference yesterday. And I don't think he and I disagree as much on this as it might sound. But yesterday he had tweeted out, he quote tweeted a tweet from the 33rd team where it listed the offensive tackles with the lowest pressure rates allowed heading into week four. Yeah. Laremy Tunsil is at the very top of the list, is the best there. And DJ said, but penalties. And then he followed up by saying, I get the annoyance, but it's really overblown when he's protecting the face of the franchise at an elite rate. Does Laremy have to stop false starting? Yes. Is it worth the trade-off? Absolutely. The absolutely is the part I disagree with, because that, yes, there are a lot of really good offensive tackles who have more false starts than average, because they're trying to find that balance between, all right, I'm going to push the envelope and time the snap count just right. Laremy does it at an extreme rate. So the trade-off there is already out of skew. And a lot of those, when we look at some of the things that have held the Texans back in the passing game, it's specifically third down. The Texans are horrendous on third down right now. A lot of those third downs and some of the field goal attempts are made more difficult because it's third and seven, specifically because Laremy Tunsil has had a false start. Like, he's actively making it more difficult for the offense to operate.
Well,
he's contributed to knocking the Texans out of field goal range. I'll include the one, man, Kaimi nailed a 59-yarder. But that should have been a 54-yarder 2 weeks ago.
Yeah.
Specifically because of Laremy Tunsil.
Yeah, I mean, as long as we're talking specifically about this Vikings game, and that's where you really see the trade-off to the extreme, and I'm totally with you on this. Third and seven was the best they had.
Right.
The best they had. In while this game was still a game, third and seven was the best they had. They averaged third and 12. In the first half of that football game on the plays that eventually I know they were in third and four at one point, but they never snapped the ball on third and four on an official play because they got a false start, and eventually it's third and 19. So on the plays where they snapped the ball that the plays counted, they were third and 12. They come out of the locker room in the second half, and their first two third downs in the second half are third and 16 and third and 11. You can't live that way, and the biggest reason they were in those situations were penalties.
Right. And this is the part where I think with Laremy Tunsil, it reminds me of the shortstop in Major League, where you've got this really gifted shortstop who just still isn't, man, he's just not that guy. He's not that guy. He doesn't want to do the gritty stuff, you know?
It was Roger Dorn.
Yeah, Roger Dorn.
Played by Corbin Burnson. He was the third baseman.
Oh, he's a third baseman.
He's a third
baseman.
Yeah, right. He played the hot corner. Yeah.
So the thing about it with Laramie is, all right, if we're going to cite PFF stats and things like that, which people love to do when it suits their cause, when it doesn't, but let's be honest, both Laramie Tunsil and Titus Howard, by PFF grades and what have you, are mediocre run blockers. Yeah. So, like, this is my standard for Laramie Tunsil. I think he's physically capable of being a Hall of Fame caliber offensive tackle.
Agreed.
But when it comes to, all right, finding that balance between false starts and protecting the passer, right now he is at a level where it's really good for padding the pressure rate stuff and everything, because they don't count those false starts against you. But, man, you are hurting the team with those. And then when it comes to the run game and the stuff that keeps you out of third and long, you guys are just so-so. You guys are just kind of mediocre. If we're going to go by all these advanced stats and everything, and it's keeping Laramie from being genuinely as awesome as he could be. Bobby Slowik, when he was asked on the Greenlight podcast this summer about Laramie Tunsil, Chris Long said, man, I just feel like Laramie, I'm paraphrasing here, said something along the lines of, like, I feel like Laramie Tunsil is just one of the most underrated guys in the league, and he's just awesome. And Bobby Slowik specifically said, as a pass blocker, yes, he's just absolutely supreme. And that's great. But, man, there are more snaps in a football game than just the passing snaps, including the ones that make it really hard for C.J. Stroud on, oh, great, you're great at protecting the passer on 3rd and 7. But it could have been 3rd and 2.
You know, if you just held on to your block.
Yeah, you're making it easier on yourself, yeah. But you're hurting the team.
Yeah.
And there are other great offensive tackles in the league who manage not to false start as much as Laramie Tunsil. So that's where am I going to judge Laramie Tunsil with a higher bar than I judge Juice Scruggs? 100%
yes. Yes, of course.
100% yes. Yes. The 1,000%, right? However much more money Laramie Tunsil is making than Juice Scruggs. Yeah. Yes, I'm gonna judge him by that bar. And I just, honestly, like, I don't know if Laramie Tunsil even understands how great he could genuinely be instead of just being a guy who's a good pass protector.
Yeah.
And how good that would be for the offense. And then, you know, the other thing, too, is if he would just take accountability for it. And if, as an offensive lineman, he wouldn't blame the center. He says it without saying his name, but he's blaming the center when he says it's the entire process. Keep that stuff in-house, man.
Yeah.
Like, be a team player. You're the offensive line. You guys are supposed to be the most tribal of the position groups.
You're the
and
captain.
And I feel like you're operating, yeah, you're just, you're operating. You're looking for your tribe, your individual PFF score more so than you want to take care of the clan.
I don't even think that's, he bristles at PFF scores publicly on social media. Like, I don't even think what you're saying is out of bounds. Like, he may care more about that than he does other stuff.
It is, and I think that's the area of opportunity for Laramie. I think is that if somebody can explain to him and get him to really understand how awesome he could be.
Right.
His standards are not the way he's operating, at least. His standards are not as high as they should be for what he could become.
Yes.
Because he has everything there, and it's just simple things. Really finishing in the run game. It's cool. All right, you did your job in the run game, and then you stopped playing. Like, dude, finish people.
Yeah.
Finish people. Set an example for the other guys on the offensive line. Hold your water. All right, if you've got a young center and the pre-snap operation isn't quite what it should be, sacrifice a little bit. You don't have to have it timed perfectly. Help that young guy out a little bit. Like, all these things. And then with that, you get the extreme offensive success. You get the Super Bowl victories. You get all those things because you could be that guy. And he's just right there. He's just got to get over that one hump that's preventing him from being genuinely one of the best offensive tackles.
Do you think this might be a rhetorical question? I don't know. Do you think that's important to him? Do you think it's important that he's a Hall of Famer? Do you think it's important, like, all the stuff, all the things you're talking about?
Yeah.
Do you think that's more important to him than getting the next biggest contract 2 years from now?
Look, I'll say this as a player. Like, I always tried to be a guy that wasn't super motivated by money or anything, but as a player, sometimes you do think, because of all this subjective stuff and PFF grades and how many primetime games you play, some of the actual rankings and ratings that's not as objective as, like, hey, how much does the team think you're worth?
Correct.
So, like, and there's a way where even if it's not because you want to just, you know, fill your coffers as much as possible and be the richest dude out there, it's still kind of an objective measuring stick that, all right, man, if a team thinks you're worth more than anybody else in the league, that then you're doing all right. And yeah, I think that's the dangerous thing. It's he's twice been told, yeah, you're the highest paid guy in the league.
Yeah.
And that's good enough. Where I don't know. I don't know if he cares about it or not, but he could, if he did care about being a Hall of Famer, yeah, he could do it. He's missing those few, they're little things because he's capable of doing it.
Yeah.
You know, it's really hard to do for any other human being, but he's capable of doing it. And I don't know. This week's going to be big because I just want to see him go out there and do a few of those things in such a way that, like, all right, this is the Laremy Tunsil that is in there.
Yeah.
And it's like, you're capable of this. Just become that complete and total offensive lineman, not just a pass blocking specialist.
Well, and the strength of this Jags defense is their defensive ends. It's Josh now, I guess it's Josh Hines Allen now. And
more
then,
so Josh Hines Allen than Trayvon Walker, but
yeah,
yes.
Yeah, Trayvon Walker's become decent. They probably should have taken Aiden Hutchinson instead.
Yeah, and isn't by probably, I mean, by 1,000%. You should have taken Aiden
Hutchinson.
Yes.
Which is what literally everybody was saying.
That's what everybody in Jacksonville, I think, is saying.
I think so, too. I think it's objectively, there's no argument against.
This show is sponsored by Midi Health. There are great things that come with age: wisdom, experience, and knowledge, just to name a few. But if you're a woman over 40, it can also bring some less desirable things like hot flashes, insomnia, brain fog, moodiness, and weight gain, all symptoms of menopause and perimenopause. Yes, hormonal transition is a fact of life, but that doesn't mean you have to accept its symptoms as just another part of aging. MIDI clinicians are menopause experts, equipped to support you with safe, effective, FDA-approved medications, as well as supplements, lifestyle coaching, and preventative health guidance. You'll come out of the experience feeling heard and with a plan to start feeling better. MIDI offers accessible care. All their services are covered by insurance, and they're conveniently accessible through telehealth visits and 24/7 messaging. You deserve to feel great. Book your virtual visit today at joinmidi.com. That's joinmidi.com.
Against it. It's funny. By the way, your last 8 minutes or so, I would clip that and send it to Laremy and play it for him and just see what he thinks of it, because that was you laid that out really, really well. It made me think of a question I got to the mailbag for Utopia this week, and someone suggesting that, I think it was Chris in the ATL, asking and suggesting, hey, if D'Amico needs somebody to talk, to pull Laremy aside and talk to him and you know, get his mind right and, you know, play for the team and, you know, finish block, all the things you were just talking about, you think J.J. Watt would do it? You know, if D'Amico said, hey, J.J., have a talk with Laremy Tunsil. And I thought to myself, I'm like, no, D'Amico probably wants to do that himself. That's what D'Amico's getting paid to do. He's the coach. Now, you know, how much he's doing that, I have no idea.
Yeah.
But it was an interesting question, because Chris asked if you could pick anybody to give Laremy Tunsil the talk to get his mind to where you want his mind to be, Seth, who would it be? I was very proud of my answer in the mailbag. And it's not even a football player, nor even somebody in football. My answer was John Lucas. John Lucas.
Oh, yeah.
I think John Lucas, there are a lot of guys that go to John Lucas for counsel or for workouts or whatever that aren't even basketball players. You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
Like, Lucas is a guy who's been through his own struggles, who's become a guy. There's a reason he was on that Rockets. I don't know if he's still on the staff or not, but, like, he was on that Rockets staff with Steven Silas for those years, and it almost seemed like the players went to Lucas more than they went to Silas, and Lucas has been that kind of guy. So I was very happy with my answer on that one.
That's a good answer, John.
Think about John Lucas. That's okay. Think about John Lucas giving Laremy Tunsil that raspy voice pep talk. You know what I mean?
I wonder with John Lucas, the thing I hesitate at first is, because the first thing I think of the John Lucas is the guys that have issues off the field and everything.
Yeah.
That he seems to be really good with them.
Yeah.
Well, I don't think Laremy necessarily has issues off the field. Or at least, I mean, nothing that boils over into public news feature or anything like that. So, but yeah, some wise sage advice from guys like that.
Yeah.
One of our listeners, Nick Paul, apologies, Nick, if I don't pronounce your name correctly. He says, maybe a dumb question, but you may best equipped to answer this as a former player. How did they get too comfortable against the toughest test they've faced so far? I think it's a very, very good question. Like, all right, what part about going into that game had them perhaps, as Cam Akers said, what was the word Cam Akers used? He said they felt too comfortable.
Feeling themselves a little bit, something
I think it's a classic, you don't know what you don't know, and they'd gotten away with a couple weeks of winning football games while not playing optimally. And it's just sometimes it's really hard without the harsh reminder and confirmation from a scoreboard to just be reminded of that. I think you just get into cruise mode a little bit. It's just it's human nature, no matter who you are. They've done these studies with like elite golfers, Sean, where it shows that, man, even when they're in situations in games when they've got a lead and what have you, they let off the gas a little bit. The putting isn't as precise when they've got a comfortable lead. Guys like Tiger Woods, that you think, oh yeah, they really get dialed in and they're going in for the kill. It's just no matter how great a competitor you are, it's just human nature.
Human nature.
And I know every coach listening right now who's had good teams knows exactly what I'm talking about. It's just it drives them insane. In some ways, coaching a good team is way harder than coaching a bad team because the bad teams, they're motivated and they know.
Yeah.
But with the good teams, you just got to figure out ways to remind them. And sometimes it just takes getting your head beat in a little bit. Yeah. And so maybe that's what that was last week. And maybe it's good that it happened in week three instead of in week five or six or seven.
But for sure, the earlier the better, no doubt about that. Let Seth Payne talk to Tunsil and get his head out of his ass. Okay, well, that's a little extreme.
It's hard for me these weeks, like, because, you know, immediately after the game, you got all these emotions and everything, and you let it hang out on the radio, and the entire time I hate myself because it's different than how I would operate, I hope or I think, if it was my team that I was coaching or if it was my brother that was playing. Because we kind of vent emotionally, and yet I really do think with Laramie, if I were looking at him like he was my brother, it's that, man, you're really, really good, but you could be so much
more. You could
more.
Be great. You could be great.
Yes. Like, I think he understands how good he is athletically and technique-wise and everything, but there's just some things it's keeping him from being. Honestly, he'd be a different type of player than Trent Williams, but he could be that guy for another decade.
Yeah.
And I don't know if he believes or accepts some of the criticism including the false starts. Yeah, listen, man, it's going to happen. There's going to be false starts. I told you on the defensive line side of it. Okay, one of the best stories I ever heard about Michael Strahan, and who told me this? it was Michael Strahan and Tom Coughlin, where Strahan would jump off sides in practice. Because great pass rushers, they tend to get a couple off sides here and there.
Yeah.
But there's a balance, right? Like, okay, they're going to be hyper-aggressive every now and then they're going to jump off sides. And one of the stories was about Michael Strahan going at it with Tom Coughlin in practices, because Coughlin would flip out when Strahan would jump off sides in practice, and Strahan would stand up and be like, "You want sacks, bleeper, bleeper? You want sacks?" but it's always in finding that balance.
Yeah.
So with Laramie, the balance has tipped way over to one extreme.
Yep.
Yes, other offensive tackles get false starts because they're trying to time the snap count, but you've been the worst at it since 2018. Bring it back to a manageable amount, you know?
Yeah.
You got to get to the Altuve level with his base running errors where, all right, Altuve makes some boneheaded base running errors, and yet the balance is okay because he's Jose freaking Altuve. He's a guy that's going to be in the Hall of Fame if he stays healthy.
And
that's where, like, that's some of that stuff is where Laramie can be.
I don't know. Maybe this is a bad example because this guy's going to walk into the Hall of Fame. But there's a little James Harden in Laramie Tunsil, I think, you know, where it's, you know, the why some of the mistakes Harden would make, like, just were
some of the turnovers
so,
and the fourth
yeah,
quarter
like
stuff
the lazy
yeah.
stuff. There was a lot of lazy stuff with Harden.
Well, okay, the other I'll take it to that level too. I mean, now fan base after fan base has now realized that okay, Harden is not championship DNA dude.
Right.
Right? Like, yes. He just isn't. I mean, he's a regular season monster.
Yep.
So maybe Laremy Tunsil doesn't care about the Hall of Fame, but does he care about Super Bowls?
Yes.
Because, and honestly, that's where, like, that's the standard I hold Laremy Tunsil to, is that he can make that entire offensive line better by doing some of these things. Whether he wants to lead or not, they follow his example. And when you're that sloppy with the pre-snap operation, or when you don't finish, like genuinely finish in the run game and do all the nasty stuff, and if you're not being that guy who makes the others around him better, then it's not a Super Bowl caliber effort, you know?
Right.
And I think that's another part of, like, yeah, I want Laremy to be that guy where you think, boy, they couldn't have won a Super Bowl without him. They just, guys like that are the reason that you can win a Super Bowl.
Yep.
And he's really close. He's really, really close.
Yeah.
He's so close.
Yeah.
And he's not, it's not like he's too tired to do any of it or anything. He's an incredible athlete.
Well, I guess the best.
He's the one veteran offensive lineman that doesn't look like he gained 37 pounds this offseason.
Right. Yeah, that's true. He looks like he's in pretty good shape.
Yeah.
And I guess the saving grace in all this is, it's not like what's got him so close, like the final thing to bridge the gap to very yeah. good to Hall of Fame, is not something physical that he needs a whole offseason of working out with 10 other offensive linemen to go at. He doesn't need to add a, like, it's not like a defensive end who needs to add a spin move or need to work
yeah.
on his hands, or a basketball player who needs to add a mid-range jumper. Stop jumping off sides.
Yeah.
Lead better. Yeah. Like, these are all yeah. things that are like, these are all there's nothing physically that you need to fix.
And
like, in terms
right.
of your overall physical makeup.
It's more mindset than anything.
Yeah.
These false starts. The false starts are, it's him, him individually wanting to be, he want really, really good in pass protection, and he's going to try to time that snap perfectly. What the team needs right now, when you have a young center, is to tamp that back a little bit, because
yeah.
you're not going to get the really good on-time pre-snap operation. The team needs you to actually maybe worsen yourself a little bit so that you guys don't get stuck in 3rd and 17.
Yeah.
It just, and okay, work with the young center, work with the pre-snap operation, but the balance is askew right now. Like, the risk-reward of you and your false starts right now, it's damaging the team.
We're getting a lot of texts on people who need to give Laremy his pep talk. You're getting a lot of love on the text page. You, as well as Mickey from the Rocky movies. I'm like an angel on your shoulder, Laremy. And I'm going
to
tell you, get up,
him.
You son of a bitch. Because Mickey
an old style bicycle riding behind him when he's on his training runs
yeah.
in the morning.
He's chasing
yeah.
chickens around and stuff.
Yeah.
Hell yeah, I love that idea. It's a great idea. Let's see. Who else do we have on here? The janitor from Notre Dame in the Rudy movie. That would be Charles Dutton. Talk to Laremy Tunsil. A few Dr. Phil votes on here. I mean, that might be the most,
I can never keep track of all I know is, all I know of Dr. Phil is, was there some kind of ugliness or something recently? I have no clue.
I don't know.
I can't keep track of which public figures have been disgraced or whatnot.
Yeah.
It's too hard to keep up with. I never know which company I'm supposed to be boycotting. So I check out on all that stuff. People will be like, oh, I can't believe you're supporting that company. I'm like, I don't know. I like their yogurt. I'm gonna keep eating the yogurt. I don't know what they did. I'm not going to read all that. I apologize to whoever they damaged or how they hurt you, but I'm just going to keep eating that yogurt.
That's funny. Yes. Bruce Matthews. Okay, I think that's a serious one right there. Have Bruce Matthews.
Well, this is why I fully support money whipping Mike Munchak into coming back into the coaching fold.
Yep.
You've been retired long enough, Mike Munchak.
Yep.
I don't care how old you are or how much you're enjoying retirement. Yeah. The city needs you.
How much you love the grandkids. Ooh, yeah. This just in. They're going to get super annoying by the time they're like nine, okay?
No, but Bruce would be a great guy to talk to. Yeah. But Munchak is who I need to be the actual assistant offensive line coach or something. Munchak, honestly, I know I talk about... I haven't talked about these guys enough lately because, you know, I don't try to talk about... I'm old enough now that nobody definitely wants to hear about my playing days, but I will say this. When it comes to playing against offensive linemen or offensive line coaches especially, like, the whole thing about playing against Bruce Matthews, because I played against him when he wasn't at his physical prime.
Right.
He was in, like, his 19th year.
No, yeah. He got in the league in, like, 83 or something like that.
He was getting by at that point on pure guile. Mm-hmm. And, man, he would just mess you up with all the veteran tricks of making you think you were having a good rep and then all of a sudden you're on the ground. Bruce Matthews was a master at all of that stuff. I mean, he was only playing with one hamstring for his last couple years, including like when they went to the Super Bowl. He couldn't move his one leg. He was like out there on a peg leg, and he was still one of the best offensive linemen in the league. But Munchak's offensive lines, man, those guys would just, they would mess with your head so much because they were so good at making things look, making it look like one type of block, and then all of a sudden they wheel on you and you're completely out of the play. You would think, oh, I'm having a good rep. I'm having a good, hey, no fair, no fair.
No fair.
And he did it. He did it with so many kind of subpar players or anything. Munchak was awesome. And annoying as hell because his guys were so well coached.
Because they were so good, all right, Payne and Pendergast with you. Hey, let's circle back to Alex Bregman. This is it, man. Listening to Joe Espada yesterday talk about Bregman and laying it all out after the game, because Bregman left the field to a standing ovation. Maybe his last regular season home game at Minute Maid Park. Maybe not. But possession error doesn't appear to be pointed in the right direction. So if this is it for Bregman as an Astro, are we okay? Are we doing okay? We will discuss that. We'll hear from Espada and Bregman himself coming up next.
Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast.
It was Joe Espada yesterday, Astros manager, following the game. Astros lose 8-1. Who cares? They're in the postseason. They'll be the 3 seed. Alex Bregman got a nice, I'll say, send-off from regular season baseball at Minute Maid Park, possibly yesterday. We'll see. If Bregman is back after this postseason, if he comes back next year. But just in case Joe Espada wanted Alex Bregman and the fans to have a moment, which they did yesterday, here's Joe Espada talking about why Bregman is such a special player.
There's qualities that you look for in a winning player. Breggy has all of them. He cares about his teammates as number one. He's a winner. The way he works, he cares about the city. He cares about the small things that sometimes you don't think about. Breggy's always thinking about that. He's in the cage helping his teammates. He's helping the pitchers with how they approach hitters. He's just a complete player. And, not only what he does on the field, but off the field. He's just a complete player. It's been great being around him for 7 years, and let's not make this like we're never going to see him again. But I thought that today was a perfect day just for the fans, to show some love and respect for one of our best players.
Yeah, in retrospect, I thought it was cool when I first saw it. I'm like, no, this means he's definitely gone.
Yeah,
if they agreed to this, it sounds like Bregman was surprised by it.
It was I would say Blum was speaking in the past tense a little bit too.
Yeah.
And the guys that work for the team broadcast and everything, obviously they don't know that much, and they of the insider stuff and everything, but I feel like Blum's around enough that maybe the conversations have been such that it's a foregone conclusion that Bregman's probably gone. It's something that I intellectually knew, but I hadn't really allowed myself to emotionally feel it yet.
Yeah, and maybe there's a concern of paying two guys deep into their 30s. Maybe in some ways it's an Altuve or Bregman thing. Do you want to have a team? How much does it hinder you if you've got Altuve at age, you know, 38.
Yeah.
And Bregman at age 35 or whatever he is at the same time, each making... I know Altuve's contract is structured kind of strange. Like, the back... Altuve's contract is the most hyper-friendly team contract that you can come up with for a Hall of Fame player.
It's built in what a player should... how a player should expect his play to decline at age 36,
yes.
37. And they built in the de-escalating non-Jose Abreu part of it all.
I've never seen anything like it. Like, he's making... Altuve... in the last 4 years of the deal, he's going to be making $30 million, $30 million, and then $10 million, $10 million. Like, I've never seen anything like it. And maybe that's happened with other players, too. I'm sure it has. But that's not what Bregman's looking for. You know, Bregman, like, this is his last big chance at a huge payday, probably, in his career. And
there are a lot of teams out there that'll say, though, if the Matt Chapman deal is 6 million, is 6 years, I think there are a lot of teams that'll say, yeah, reasonably, you know, we can expect good production out of this guy for the, you know, up through the age of 35, and we're cool if it's a little on. I think there are teams out there where Bregman's really the only quality third baseman out there in free agency, and he's a year younger than Matt Chapman. I'll be really surprised if he doesn't get that same deal. And the Astros have never gone more than 5 years on a contract extension for anybody.
When Springer left, you could look and see, like, okay, this is still a really good baseball team. When Correa left, you could look at it and go, okay, this is a really good baseball team. And who knew that Peña was going to turn into what he turned into, but you knew at least they had solutions at the minor league level for Correa. And look, in retrospect, these last couple of years, no Correa with Peña have been a massive success. A massive success. You know, Peña's been a postseason MVP, and they're paying him the league minimum. Carlos has been making $30 million a year to nurse plantar fasciitis up in Minnesota, you know? So that's worked. You know, the pitching, when Gerrit Cole left and when JV left, and JV eventually came back, but when Gerrit Cole, JV, Charlie Morton, when they all left, you go, okay, well, there's a plethora of pitching. I don't know how we'll feel if we're going through this with Framber next year, but I look at this Bregman thing, Seth, and you look at it, you go, okay, this is a team that, while the window is still open, they are not at the level they were at in the late teens and early 2020s. They're not. Mm-hmm. They're not going to win 90 games. This is the first full season since the first World Series that they're not going to win 90 games this year. And they won 90 last year exactly. So it's a team that is going backwards compared to what their peak was. And you've got Tucker and Framber, where the possession arrow is pointed against them coming back too. But to me, it's what Bregman means to the fabric of the team. Like, I know, as far as like Springer and Correa, boy, they were both fabric guys too. But Bregman,
With Bregman, you know, one thing Espada mentioned was just how much he cares about his teammates and all of that. I mean, he's the consummate pro when it comes to just working at your craft. Remember Lance McCullers telling the story about the plane rides after road games? Or as they were even after home, when they were just the plane rides in general, that Bregman would just have his head fixed on whatever MLB game was being broadcast on. On the seat. I think McCullers described it as like on the seat back video.
Yeah.
Like he's just locked in, always just a consummate baseball junkie. The most obvious example of him helping his teammate out has been Hunter Brown. And just Bregman's advice for Hunter Brown to work his sinker back in that he hadn't thrown in professional baseball, and what a difference it made for Hunter Brown. You think about how many other moments there's probably been like that with Alex Bregman on little tips here and there, and how much he's probably helped out his teammates over the years. It's impossible to quantify. The other part of it, too, is just even in Bregman's down stretches or some of the bad playoff series that he's had, he's always giving you competitive at-bats.
Yeah.
Like, it's just, he's a pain in the ass for the opponent all the time.
Yep.
Yeah, if he can't do it offensively, he's doing it as a defender. If he's not producing the numbers offensively, he's still tending to give you really competitive at-bats, getting information for the other guys in the dugout, the things he's learning from those at-bats, all that stuff. And yet, The Astros have done this over and over again, and they've shown that they can continue to compete. I think if you look beyond this season, Sean, I guess where I look at the Astros right now is, it's I don't want to be guilty of saying, like, well, don't worry about before June 1st because none of it matters. All right, it's a long baseball season. But before June 1st this year was a one of the weirdest things.
It was an outlier. Yeah.
Since June 1st, you've gotten some really good players out of some younger, some really good play out of younger guys who have developed and come along. The pitching staff looks to be, you get guys back from injury this next offseason. Some of them are potentially trade pieces that make up for a little bit of your pipeline. I mean, the Astros, whether they win a World Series or not, it feels a little bit like what the Chiefs were able to do last year, which is, oh, it's a reset year. In which, by the way, yeah, we were a really good team in the reset year. But you can move forward some, but part of that reset is losing Alex Bregman.
Yep. Yeah. Here's Bregman talking about, man, when I looked at the label on this cut, he says 9 seasons went by, and it's been 9 seasons for Bregman. He's right. 9 seasons went by in a flash.
It went really quick. I remember the first game here against the Yankees, and
didn't play a grand slam that night, right?
Yeah, so that's the warning track to right center. Yeah, Michael Pineda was pitching. It happens fast.
We should point out that his debut should have come 3 days earlier, I think, against
Except
the
that
Angels.
You got him to it. You got him to. Yeah, you guys screwed that up.
I walked him into a bear trap. Yeah, he was on. Boy, what a unique time that was when the Astros were just feeding guys. They were still kind of trying to get on the landscape back then, even though they made the playoffs the year before. We got on the triple threat with me and Rich Lord and Ted Johnson. We got Alex Bregman on the show while he was at AAA, or what I think he was in Fresno at AAA, and it was obvious he was going to be coming up pretty soon. Mm-hmm. You know, he had gotten there and he was doing really, really well. And we had him on early in the week, and they were playing the Angels at the end of the week. And I just asked him a question where I said, every kid's, dreams about being in the major leagues and probably pictures who the pitcher is going to be that they're standing in the box going against. Who do you picture? You know, like when you're dreaming like that, who did you picture? Figuring he'd say, like, I don't know, Randy Johnson or some, whatever. He goes, I don't know, but they wear a gray and red uniform. the colors of the Angels. Yeah. And we're all looking at each other like, oh, okay. I think we just got a scoop there, maybe, that he's going to. And then all the rumors had been he was coming up for that series with the Angels. Mysteriously, the Astros held off for 3 more days after that.
Yeah, I don't know. I wouldn't. You know what? I think Bregman was probably just doing his visualization exercises and everything, getting himself ready for that potential. So, maybe.
Why are you harshing my scoop that I got 9 years ago?
Well, because I feel like you felt guilty about maybe delaying his little bit of.
Combination.
As long as you didn't feel guilty about it.
Combo of guilt and pride. I can feel both, right?
Regarding that debut, we remembered Bregman had a rough go of it at the plate.
1 for 30.
Yeah, over 30 to start off his career. This is what I worry about with Bregman, the same way I worry about with George, that I feel bad for George Springer in some regards, is that, man, when I went to that game in Toronto a couple years ago, it was very clear that, okay, boy, very few Springer jerseys, and Springer did, he hadn't been tearing off at an all-star pace that year or anything, and there will never be that same level of belovedness for George Springer as there was in Houston. And Bregman, I think likewise, man.
Same.
Bregman's long droughts, easier for him to weather those in terms of adulation from the fan base. And it's not like it's been rosy for him from the fan base at times.
No.
But it's a lot easier when you got a couple World Series victories behind it.
It is.
If he's going through these long droughts on a new team where he was supposed to be the guy to put him over the hump, it's not going to be the same reception.
Dude, and the droughts are always at the beginning. You know, one thing, if you had a hot April and May and then there's a drought in June, you can weather that,
What has he been? What is Bregman?
What do you mean?
He's a notoriously slow starter.
Okay, guys, I thought you were talking.
Thank you, Ben, for understanding what I was saying there. And unlike Sean,
I didn't. All right, Payne and Pendergast with you on a Thursday. Let's get back to the Jacksonville Jaguars and the Texans. The Texans can accomplish something here beyond just the final score. They might get a dude fired this weekend, and if so, The odds board has some really interesting stuff if you're an AFC South opponent of the Jags in future years. We'll get to that coming up next.